Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 146 of the Youth Ministry Booster Podcast. What are you doing right now? You listening to this? You working on your sermon? Driving to the car? Off to the gym? Wherever you're at, we're hoping that this podcast is bringing some honesty, some humor, and just some good ministry insight into your life. It is no small thing that we've been doing this for a while, and we are just overwhelmed by the constant feedback, and thanks for encouraging you, and we want you to know that that encourages us. So thank you so much for listening. If you haven't subscribed, rated, reviewed, we always love to have that from you. But a couple announcements before we jump into today's amazing interview episode. Number one, we're going to be at the National Youth Workers Convention in November in St. Louis, and we'd love to see you there. We're going to have a special Youth Ministry Booster members hangout. We're going to be in the booth the whole time, but we are buying coffee for anybody who is a Youth Ministry Booster member current or signs up between now or at Nationals. Announcement two, starting Monday, we have a brand new podcast episode every day in October interviewing an amazing woman in youth ministry. It is our month-long emphasis of hashtag women in YM. So check it out. It's going to be all over Instagram and Twitter and the Facebook. Make sure to check out new, fresh podcast content and content in Youth Ministry Booster from amazing women who serve young people in churches as youth ministers, volunteer, part-time, full-time. It's going to be a month-long celebration of hearing from some really amazing folks. But before then, we got a special interview for you today, and that's with Paul Turner. You may not have heard him yet, but you may have utilized one of his helpful videos on the YouTube. Chad Higgins, our own Chad Higgins, takes a little time to talk to Paul Turner, 30-year youth ministry vet, today. I learned from this interview, and I know you will too, so let's jump to it, and I'll catch you on the flip for anything to fill in between.
Hello and welcome to Youth Ministry Booster Podcast. My name is Chad Higgins. I am doing one of our interviews this week. I know normally you guys are used to hearing Mr. Zach Workin do our interviews, but I have the great privilege today to have a conversation with Mr. Paul Turner. Paul, how are you?
I am fantastic, Chad. I am just kicking it this morning. Like I told you, I got coffee in me, so life is good and God is good and coffee is
awesome. And well, so tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? How did you get there? All of those kind of things.
Well, I am originally from New York City. I grew up in New York and Brooklyn, to be specific. And I grew up there till I was about 12, 13 years old, and then wound up moving to Florida with my mom. My dad had passed away when I was 8, 9 years old, and wound up moving to Florida to take care of his dad, and lived in Florida for probably 20 some odd years, went to middle school and high school and all that kind of good stuff. And actually got saved at a camp there. Some kids around the corner were going to a camp, and so I wound up joining them and wound up giving my heart to the Lord to the camp. And eventually, after many years of working at the camp as a counselor and so forth, I met my wife at that camp. That camp's been very, very good to me, I just have to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, she was from Birmingham, Alabama. And several years after we were married, we wound up having an opportunity to be here in Birmingham. So I am now in Birmingham, Alabama. I head up a ministry called Disciple Project Ministries, and I help youth ministries and youth workers become better at what they do.
That's awesome. Okay, so grew up in Brooklyn.
Yes.
What is that experience like?
It is
for an Oklahoma boy, like I don't know that you could get any more different, right?
Right, right. Well, it is amazing to grow up in the city. It's just you get that whole neighborhood feel. Yeah. I don't know anywhere else where you're going to get that. You live in a neighborhood with this cast of characters and the people you. The best thing was when I went back this past July with my family for my wife's 50th birthday and for my son's graduation, and was able to actually take them down a little tour of my block and take them down the street. Okay. and show them the house I lived in and all that kind of good stuff. So it is an amazing thing to grow up there, and it's also pretty amazing to go back. It brings up such great memories.
That's awesome. I don't know why. It's probably because of like movies and things like that. Mm-hmm. But anybody I talk to that they're like, yeah, I grew up in, you know, in New York, specifically Brooklyn, I mean, they could be 14 years old, and in my mind, it's like 1955. You know what I mean? Like, kids are playing stickball in the street. And
that was my world.
Fire hydrant?
Yes.
Was it?
All of it, yes. Stickball, stoop ball, you know, playing hide and seek around the block. It was, yeah, it was all those things, man. It was a wonderful time.
When you started your story, to be honest, too, when you were like, okay, lived in Brooklyn, moved to Florida, like it felt very Karate Kid movie-ish a little bit, right? Like I was waiting for you to be like, you know, I moved there with my mom and met this old, you know, Chinese man who began to teach me, you know, karate through fence painting and sanding.
That's exactly right. And funny story, I did take karate for a whole 5 days. So that didn't work out for me. So I was not the Karate Kid. I was the Karate Dropout. That's what I was.
Amazing. All right. Well, so you told us a little bit about this salvation story for you. One of the questions that we want to hear is, you know, you have spent so much of your life dedicated to student ministry. How did that come about? What did that calling into youth ministry look like for you in your life?
Well, for me, that was, you know, you talk about Karate Kid, and for me, you know, I just entered and I'm in my 30th year of youth ministry and working with students and working with now many youth pastors and things like that. But for me, youth pastors were the Mr. Miyagis. Yes. They're the ones, they were the guys who taught me how to paint the fence. They're the guys who taught me wax on, wax off. They're the guys that taught me the little things about handling my anger and dealing with, you know, how to deal with my enemies. And, you know, those were the, you know, what got me into youth ministry was good youth pastors, were good youth ministries who saw me as an individual, saw me as a you know, God bless them, a good investment. And so for me, that was, you know, I tell people, I say, look, I had three choices when graduating high school. You know, number one was enter into social work, because I thought that was a good fit. I thought, well, I like, you know, I can deal and solve problems. I can help hurting kids, so forth. But I wasn't the brightest bulb in the box, as they say. And I said, well, okay, I can do that. Or number two, I could be a professional bowler. I had some skills back in the day. So I was looking at professional bowling. I was a bowling alley rat and played in a lot of tournaments and things like that. I wanted to be Guppy Troop. So look that name up. He had some great pants he would wear every time. And I wanted to be Guppy Troop because I wanted to wear wild
looking
pants.
You already know. You already know like 100% more professional bowlers than I did.
And then my third choice was, well, maybe a youth pastor. And I think those were confirmed. Those callings were confirmed in various ways. Number one, it, you know, had the greatest impact upon my life through the three youth workers I had throughout my lifetime. And one, my first youth pastor who taught me the value of hard work, who taught me how to care, who taught me how to be empathetic to some degree, who introduced me to Christian music without him really knowing it based on what he was playing on the radio. And my second youth pastor taught me the value of biblical studies. He taught me the value of reading, taught me the value of running a good program. And my third youth pastor taught me the value of souls and the value of evangelism and the value of reaching out to others. And so those are my Mr. Miyagis, you know, who through their influence helped me make those. And of course, it was, you know, by the way, I don't want to discount God, by the way, who
he was there too.
He was, hey, wild enough. Hey, listen, there was a missionary from Africa who was doing a prayer line in church. And I went up for prayer and I walked away. I said, you know, I'm searching, I'm looking. And he said in his African dialect, he says, young man, come back to me. And I came back and he says, do you feel a call to ministry? And I said, I do. He says, let me pray for you. And he wound up confirming within my own soul at that point, the thing that I thought that's what I needed to do.
Yeah. Well, we know that you've had this long dedicated work to youth ministry. Do you still bowl?
I do sometimes. Yes, I still go out and I do a little bowling. It's good exercise. And I'm always, my style is weird too. If you watch me bowl, it always looks like I'm going to fall over. You think I am, when I throw that ball, you think Paul is about to fall over on his face. And it's just, that's just my style. I have a three-step style. It's always, you know, and I'm always experimenting with, you know, my ball and my style and the arrows. I work the arrows, you know, on the lane and where I'm standing on the dots, all that kind of stuff.
So, like, what's your high game here?
204, okay. I want to say. 204. Well, I had a 143 average at one point. So I don't keep up with my scores or my, I should say, I don't keep up with my average very much. But, you know, if a good day now, maybe I'm in the 140s. Okay.
I like it. Who knew, so, man? If I'm ever in a bowling league, man, I'm going to call you. We can.
Please do. I would love to come.
Dude, I feel like we could put together a solid youth ministry bowling team, like with shirts and all that kind of thing. That would be.
Oh, like, yeah. What would be the name of such a team?
The Holy Rollers.
That was low hanging right fruit there, Chad. That was it. I'm in.
See, I have a Fred Flintstone style of bowling. I get them little twinkle barefoot? Toes. Is that going, it? Man.
Yes.
That's awesome. So yes. We tell me in 30 years of student ministry, and I know you probably have a ton of these. What is one of your favorite moments?
Oh, wow. You're right. There are a lot of moments, but I, of course, I protect the innocent. You know, I change the names to protect the innocent, so I shall call him Bob.
Dude, I throw people in Bob, the bus, man.
No, I got to go. I got to protect people because I want to be protected. I reap what I sow around here. So Bob was one of my students, and at the time, I mean, he was my tech guy, as only tech guys can be. If you have a middle school tech guy, just picture it. And yes, that's him. And we were setting up for a camp thing, camp night at the church, something. And I told him, I said, listen, Bob, don't drive your truck on the field, okay? Because it's wet and I don't want you to tear up the field. So Bob says, okay, I'm going to pull my truck onto the field anyway. Yeah. You know, what he did not know is that I had a brand new camera. And it was in like an orange case. And I just went, I had put it down on the field to do something. And he pulls in and ran over this brand new camera that I had bought for the youth ministry. And he gets out of the truck and he looks at me as dead in the face as you can and says, you shouldn't have put your camera on the ground. And I went, and then there's two other students there that are helping me set up. And I think this is it. This is where I officially lost my mind. I think they thought Paul is about to pop a blood vessel. And I am shaking, literally shaking the case. It's an orange case and I'm shaking it. And you can hear the camera inside of it going, jung. And I am shaking. And I'm just going after Bob, I told you, don't drive, Bob. But his response was, you shouldn't have put your camera, as if this was my fault. This is my fault. And I'm going, and I'm just going after him. And I am just, I'm livid. I'm mad. And I go back to the youth room and I am just sitting there just trying to calm down. I'm just going, and the we share this story. These kids that were those other boys, I still know them from around the town. And anytime we get together, we tell Bob stories. And this is the Bob story that always comes up because they thought I was going to stroke out at that moment. I'm in the youth room. And here comes Bob, and Bob comes in, and he doesn't say anything, and he takes his own personal camera and lays it down on the pool table and just looks at me and then just walks out. And I said to myself at that point, I said, you know, this kid, who later on, by the way, I did not know this at the time, this young man was diagnosed later with Asperger's. And so he did not connect points, right? So, and I thought to myself, and I, you know, I tell that story in, you know, different cases and things because you know, we think that kids can't be empathetic or kids can't be, and even him, you know, and I went on a 15-year journey with him. I just worked with him until I just could not anymore. I was like, I can't, I just can't do it anymore. And even into his adulthood and those things. And I remember that story. And when I see him, we laugh about that. But that just, that story just tells me that, you know, even in this kid's heart, even where he was with all the damage and all the things he had gone through and all the things of his life, you know, that God just, you know, showed me, right? He was just being Bob, but God was showing me, says, listen, Paul, you know, I got this kid. Even if you don't have him, I got him. And you need to pay attention because his heart is big. He doesn't know everything. He doesn't do everything the way you want him to do it. He doesn't respond. He doesn't, you know, he says, even though he doesn't do that, he says, listen, don't count him out. You know, I'm still working in his life and he can do, I can continue to do great things in his life, even if you can't.
Aren't we so naive to sometimes think that like youth ministry is all about the youth and we forget that like God is really doing something in our own heart and our own mind and the ministry that he allows us to participate in?
It's a story within a story, and we forget that, you know, that God is working on us while we're working with others, and unbeknownst to us, We just think it's a, you know, we're the hero of our own minds and all that. And God says, not so much. I think I'm in control here and you're just all along for a ride.
So along with like these amazing moments, you know, as you know, 30 years of youth ministry experience, like youth ministry can also be very tough, right? With all these like great moments we have, we also have these moments that we just want to hang it up and call it quits and walk away. But we always want to, I think, highlight these moments because for guys like yourself that walk through them, the cool story is like, I got to this point, but I stayed in, right? Like that to me is the encouragement part of this. So tell us about a time that you almost quit or that was difficult.
Well, I can tell you a time that I did quit in my own soul in regards to even going back to youth ministry. And that is very much an experience where this happened after the second time I was fired. I know you can't believe it. You're going, Paul, you were fired?
A lot of the really great youth pastors have these stories, by the way.
It didn't feel great at the time. And I don't know if I'm that much great now, but I had a lot of, enthusiasm, let's say. And I had my own ideas as to how things should go. And after the second time I was fired, that's when I lost a lot. I had the idealism kicked out of me. And I just said, that's enough of that. I said, if that's what ministry is, I said, I really don't want any more of that. That's the worst. And I look back on this, and look in my head, I go, listen, I'm sure I did something. I was never immoral. It was never illegal. It was never anything. It's the discussion you have that says, Brother Paul, we just don't think you're fitting here right now. And you have that discussion. And of course, these guys, these pastors, and God bless them, I know they're under a lot of stress, and I know that, and I'm sure I did not help with that. But I didn't think firing was, I always wanted them to work with me versus just, you know, canon me. But so what I did was I just said, okay, so I had very much a Moses kind of experience. I kind of went to the back 40 and said, I'm just going to hang out here. And I'm not going to go back. And I went back to the camp that I wound up coming to know Christ at. And I worked there 4 years. And in that 4 year time, I just said, I'm not going back to youth pastoring. Youth pastoring is just too hard. It's just hard. I was just like, I have all these ideas. I have these things. And I said, I'm just not interested anymore. And I found a book. There was a library there. And I wound up reading the book. I found a book on the shelf called Crucified by Christians by Gene Edwards. And if you're not familiar with the book, it is a journey into the fact that, that it was the religious community that you know, took Jesus to task. It wasn't the poor. It wasn't the lame. It wasn't, it was the religious figures. And I was able to put some sort of context. And of course, you know, maybe in my head I was having, you know, messianic complex or whatever I was having, but I thought, okay. And then later on, you know, after that year is when I finally, my wife, God bless my wife. Can I just say that, Kim? Mm-hmm. If you ever listen to this, I want to tell you, I love you with all my heart. And you deserve crowns upon crowns for your life with me. And at the end of that time, my wife and of course the internet had just sort of come on, and my wife was digging around already, and she had found that her church, her home church in Birmingham, Alabama, had an opening, and she suggested that to me. And of course, I was not real happy about it, but I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and do this. I'm not doing it for me. I'm going to do it for her. Because I said, listen, she has traveled with me. She has been through it. And I just said, look, I owe her big. And I said, I'm going to go ahead and do this. And I wound up going ahead and applying online and went for an interview, took my wife back to Birmingham, went for the interview, and actually got the job. And I don't know if I was disappointed or shocked or what I was. I said, well, I'm going to do it for you, babe. And God has his ways. God has his ways of saying, okay, you going to be on the back 40 for a while? Okay, I'll wait. And then God said, okay, so here's the opportunity. And that's what got me back. That's what got me here actually to Birmingham was taking that position. And I'm glad because I was able to, and it was super important to me that I wanted to wrap. I did not want that to be in my mouth. I had that sour taste where I did not want this to be the last days. I didn't want to say that's how I wrapped up my work in youth ministry. And God honored that and said, I have a better way for you to end. And he wound up working that out. And so I'm grateful. So if you're listening and you say, I've been fired, I've had issues, I've had problems, let me tell you something. God's still at work in that process. And you may be discouraged and you may feel terrible and all those things. Let me tell you something. You know, it's not how you start. It's how you finish that matters. And so, you know, God allowed me to do that. And I think God will do that for those that are listening as well.
Man. I love how you talk too about your willingness and this like journey almost in your own mind of like giving up some of these, you know what I mean? These idealistic views of a student ministry. And I think so often God has to, I mean, he's molding us and shaping us. And, you know, I think part of my own story is somewhat, I had these idealistic views that I have of like leadership and church and student ministry and those kind of things, and God shaping and molding that from place to place that I've worked in. And so that's very cool, man. I love to hear that. So, I mean, you talked a little bit to our listeners that are walking through maybe firing or frustration. If you could go back in time, and you get to talk to first year youth pastor Paul.
Yeah.
Okay? I can't guarantee that he's going to listen. All right. But what advice would you share with him over a cup of coffee?
Man, it's pretty simple there for me. It's make your family number one. Don't be, we're so ambitious, Chad. We're so ambitious when we're young. We're so, our whole life's ahead of us. We have seen models. We have seen, you know, even worse today than it was in my day because social media has aggravated that, that everybody's got to be Stephen Furtick. Everybody's got to be, you know, Francis Chan. Everybody's got to be, you know, whatever they want to be. And they're chasing these. And I would tell my younger self, listen, buddy, these people, your youth group, your pastor, your church people, are not going to probably be at your funeral. I said, you're probably going to go through 3-4 churches, or, you know, if you're blessed enough to be in one church your whole life, that's great. But these people whom you're going to serve for the 1 year, the 2 year, the 4 year, excuse me, all these things are more than likely not going to be at your funeral, and they're not going to get up and speak at your funeral. And I would sit across from myself and have 3 cups of coffee and say to them, say, listen, buddy, your ambition, all these things, for what? For what? What is it for? You're at the end of the day, you're going to be left. And I would tell them now, I'd say, look, you have 3 great kids. You have a kid that you just sent off to college. You have a daughter who lives in Nashville, who's married, who works with international adoption. You have a middle son who is on a career path within the Boys and Girls Club. Your relationship with them is all very, very different, but you're going to think in the back of your mind, you could have done more. You chased these pipe dreams of big ministries or lots of kids. And I would tell them, I say, look, don't sacrifice that relationship with your wife. Your wife's going to tell you one day, you're one guy. Shortly after that, your wife's going to say to you, you know, if it's a choice between ministry and me, I'm not sure you're going to pick me. I said, your wife's going to tell you that, and you better wake up, brother, because the answer to that question will define the rest of your life. So you better choose wisely. And the day that my wife asked me made that statement to me, I don't even know if it clearly resonated, but I can tell you what, turning 50 years old this year, and over the years, I have tried to make that my relationship with my wife much more of a priority. Take care of your business. Don't hurt the family. Don't make these crazy decisions and yank your family all over creation because you're pursuing whatever it is you're pursuing. So I would say keep your ambitions in check and make sure you keep number one, keep your relationship with the Lord intact. And number two, make sure you love your family more than you love the ministry.
Dude, that's huge. I don't know how many people are probably listening that their wives or their husbands are saying that exact same thing to them right now, maybe without those words, right? Just their actions or what they're screaming behind the scenes. And I think that we can become so blind to that. I want to go off script a little bit with you, Paul, because, man, what you're talking about is really resonating with my heart. How difficult do you think it is for ambition, for self-ambition and faithfulness of a pastor to live within the same heart? You think it's possible or impossible?
Well, Clay Scroggins has a great chapter on this in his book, How to Lead When You're Not in Charge. And he talks about this, and he talks about ambition that is given to God, right? If you lay your ambition on the altar and say, hey, you know what? This is not we want to do well. We want to reach people for Christ and reach kids for Christ. And we want to build ministry and we want to do all that stuff. You know, he says, but listen, if you take your ambition and use it for yourself, that's going to be destructive. If you take your ambition and put it on the altar before the Lord and says, Lord, keep my ambition in check. Don't let me pursue you. Don't let me run ahead of you. Don't let me, you know, do not do anything out of selfish ambition, right? But what is beneficial to others. And I think if you will always act in humility, if you'll always act in and humble yourself and do that and lay that before the Lord, I think you're going to wind up, I think you can have godly ambitions and a godly ambition to do well, as well as you can. But I think ambition that is not checked is not great because you will make selfish decisions for what you want to do and then make your family, make your youth, make your church revolve around that.
Yeah, I think you're dead on, man. Absolutely. All right, so final question for you. What is like one practical tip or application or process that's making your time in youth ministry better? Like what's some advice or something that you can give our audience today?
You know, I would just tell youth workers, don't be afraid to experiment. You know, don't be afraid. I think, you know, there's there's plenty of apps and other things you can do. You know, but being a, and traveling more and speaking more to youth groups and, and training youth workers, you know, I just tell them, I say, look, try it. It's experimental. Tell your kids, I'm going to try this for a month. I'm going to try this for 6 weeks. Let's try it, right? Because I think we think all things are permanent. When we make a change, we say, well, that's it. Now this is going to be forever until Jesus comes. And I'm saying, be more flexible in your programming and in your experimenting, because that which you put into place, you know, you have to manage. If you make it law, now you have to manage it. Now you have to, you cater to it almost. But if you say this, we're going to experiment with this. This is not law. This is not written in cement and stone here, but we're going to experiment with this because I want to see what God will do with this. I want to see how kids respond to it. I want to, and that's everything. That's everything from how you preach to how you program your Wednesday night. And I understand, listen, there are certain, you know, we've become, you know, we're youth ministry and programming. We all have our sacred cows. We all have our idols. We all think it's supposed to be 90 minutes long or 1 hour long, and we got to do 4 songs and a poem and you know, games. And I understand all that. But don't be afraid to experiment. Don't say that I got to have a good meeting tonight when in reality, God says, look, I just want to meet your kids tonight. Would you be willing to experiment a little bit? Would you go off the reservation a little bit? Would you try a little something different for the sake of kids? Not so that you have a great meeting, but so that kids can meet me. And if we'll put the meeting aside, right, and say, okay, the meeting is one thing, but now I want kids to encounter the Lord in this way. And that's everything from maybe one night you're doing prayer differently. You're doing the message differently. You're doing prayer stations. You're doing communion every week for 6 weeks. You're doing, you know, whatever that is. Experiment, not for the sake of experimentation, but experiment in regards to how the Lord's moving in your life and how you think the Lord is wanting to move and connect with these students. Don't worship the meeting. You know, experiment and let the Lord guide and lead you to be able to meet the needs of kids on your midweek or your Sunday night or whenever you have those group meetings. Awesome,
man. Well, Paul, tell us, where can our people connect with you? How can they find you? All that kind of stuff.
Well, I like to joke. I say, look, if you don't know where to find me, you're not looking for me, because if you're a youth pastor, because I try to be everywhere if I can be. But if anybody wants to connect, they can go to thediscipleproject.net, and you can connect there with my YouTube channel, where I have over 600 videos, training videos, and all kinds of stuff there they can work with. There's also a podcast that I have called the Youth Ministry Motion Podcast, which I hope to have Chad on very soon. And they can also read the blog there. So I have thoughts and ideas on youth ministry.
Love it, man. Well, hey, you guys, please connect with Paul. Reach out to him. Check out what he's doing, man. We want to connect youth ministers with people where they can grow and encourage you. And so if you're listening this week, we want you to take advantage of all those. We're excited in the month of October 2018. We'll be having Paul inside of our network in Youth Ministry Booster. And so if you are already a member with us or you're wanting to check it out, we want to invite you into October. Come join a live conversation with him, talk more with him, and check out everything we have in Youth Ministry Booster. Hey, we are thankful that you have joined us this week. We'll see you next week.
All right, there you go. Episode 146 with our new friend, and maybe your new friend, Paul Turner. Make sure to check out the Discipleship Project and all of his fantastic YouTube videos. That'll be linked in the show notes below. If you haven't had a chance yet, though, please do subscribe, rate, and review the Youth Ministry Booster Podcast on Apple Podcast, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, and consume them. And you can leave a review like Jeebs, who wrote, amazing. Amazing. Is that right, Jeebs? This will have an amazing impact on your ministry. Jeebs, we are thankful that it has made impact on your ministry and for anybody else listening. If it's made an impact on your ministry, we want to hear from you. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast this week. And as Chad said, we'll see you back next week with a whole bunch of goodness. Thanks for listening. We appreciate you. Blessings on your ministry.
I'm going to turn your world upside down. And I'm going to show you things you've never seen.